Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. As we come to the end of the year, we are all in holiday spirits. No matter what you celebrate this time of year, it's definitely a good time. But sometimes, some of the most evil, depraved, and awful people lurk the streets looking for victims. In this video, I'm going to be covering some of the creepiest and most mind-blowing stories sent in by subscribers this year. I've never read them before, and you have definitely never heard them. Helping me today is my good friend Fearcrawler. If you enjoy his voice, be sure to check out his channel. You can find it in the description down below. Please subscribe. He's a great guy and puts out great content. If you have a story that you'd like to share, you know where to send it in already, but if you don't, swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below would be your best bet. Now, sit back, get warm, and let's watch these creepy as hell stories that'll keep you up tonight. I've been dreading sharing this story as the memories, they're really hard to relive. My family and I were involved in a shooting. It was December 20th, 1993, in Berwick, Maine, where these events happened. They lasted until about the 21st or 22nd. However, I was 14 when this happened, and my father was no longer in my family or my life. To give you an idea of the layout of where we lived, before you walk into our apartment, you have to go into a room with a staircase that leads up. Our door is the last one on the right when you're facing the front entrance. When you first enter our apartment, you will start in the living room, followed by the kitchen. To the left is the bathroom, and through a doorway past the kitchen is my brother's room. Through my brother's room, in another doorway, is my room. While in the back of my room, to the left is the back exit out of the apartment itself. Now that I've got a setup out of the way, I'll explain the story itself. It was Christmas break, and it had been snowing rather heavily. We just finished having my brother's birthday party, and as such, there was my mom, three brothers, myself, and our neighbor's son. We'll call him Johnny. Johnny and I were the same age, went to the same school, and he had a crush on me. All the kids were in my brother's room working on a puzzle when I wanted to ask my mom a question. She was in the living room. I should also add there's a window above the kitchen sink which will be important later. And I headed in before asking my mom something. I soon noticed a sound as I walked by the kitchen but I ignored it. I soon head back to my brother's room when I hear the noise again. I turned to my mom and asked her if she heard the noise as well. She confirmed it. And she had me being the dumb 14-year-old I was at the time, and I wanted to go see if it happened again, I walked to the window. I walked by and again we heard the noise. Curious, I asked my mom what she thought the sound was. She told me it was probably just kids playing around with firecrackers. She just asked me what I thought it was, and I told her I honestly had no clue. I then shrugged and kept going towards my brother's room, at which point I heard that firecracker sound several more times. I turned back and asked my mom if she still thought it was firecrackers, as I thought it sounded more like a gun at this point. She told me whoever was making the noise was going too far, and she'd go to her friends to use their phone to call the police. as we did not have a phone at the time. I was instructed not to leave or open the door for anyone except for her, but I know it was her because she knocked twice and gave me a signal. It was at this point she locked the door behind her and headed to her friends. My brothers must have known something was wrong because when I saw them again, they had a worried look on their faces. I instructed them and Johnny to crawl to the bathroom, and once I grab my one-year-old brother, I'll join them, locking the door behind me. I figured things would be safer this way as there were only two tiny windows that no adults could fit through in that room. We stayed quiet and listened outside. It had only been a minute when I heard several more popping sounds. My brothers began crying, and I'll admit, although I kept a brave face, I was absolutely terrified on the inside. I couldn't shake the thought of my mom being out there and was worried that she could be shot or worse right now. Worried about my mother, I handed my little brother to Johnny and said I'd check on my mom. I peeked through the windows of the kitchen and didn't see my mom, which led me to believe I might have overreacted about the entire situation. Just as I was about to calm down, I heard knocking at the door, which made me jump. Johnny gave me a look as though asking of what we should do. I wasn't sure what to do. The knocking continued, and I know it wasn't my mom. Johnny came out and stood next to me as another knock came at the door. Johnny finally asked who it was, at which point a deep male voice said,
"It's me."
Johnny, unsure of who it was, asking him who the hell was me, the voice said again,
"It's me, Kevin."
I turned to Johnny and said it was okay, as Kevin was my stepdad. Johnny opened the door, at which point Kevin asked if we were hearing the popping sounds. We said yes before Kevin told us to go with him to their place until my mom got back. We agreed, and just as I was about to leave, I saw my mom's friend Bear out in the street. Assuming that meant things were okay, I told Johnny to go with my brothers and rushed out to meet Bear. I asked Bear if he had seen my mom, at which point he said, "Yeah, she's on the phone with the police right now." I hugged Bear before standing slightly to his left, at which point I noticed he was eyeing a house near the garage. What happened next gave me nightmares. I heard the sound of a gun. Bear grabbed my right arm, and then I heard another sound and blood splattered on me. Bear told me to run as he fell to the ground, screaming in pain. He'd been shot in the left cheek. I ran and busted through Johnny's door, crying, shaking, and hyperventilating. I'm asthmatic. As I fell to my knees crying, this was when I met Wendy, who would become my best friend. She asked me who the hell I was before I started screaming about being her neighbor and Bear getting shot in the face. Wendy hung up the phone she was on, and her parents came into the room. Everything after this is a bit hazy on the account of my being in shock and traumatized from witnessing someone get shot in front of me. Wendy took me upstairs to change clothes and was trying to say something to me, but I just couldn't hear her for some reason. Everything was like muffled. My mom showed up at the neighbor's before bringing us home, but I don't remember when or how. I remember my brother, whose birthday it was, throwing up in the toilet in our apartment. The paramedics were trying to get to us at one point, but they couldn't because the shooter was shooting at anything that moved at the time. I was rocking back and forth staring into a mirror, shocked when I noticed a man in the mirror. The man looked to be in his 40s, somewhat heavy set, messy hair down to his ears, brown eyes, and appeared unshaven. We were in the bathroom for hours. I'm not sure how many, but the police kept calling, which is how my mom found out the ambulance couldn't get to us. I also heard they searched Bear and reached him. He was still alive, but in critical condition. This calmed me somewhat, terrifying all of us. I was just so afraid that he might not make it. Suddenly, the door burst open and creeped us all out. It turned out to be SWAT, thankfully. Although afraid, I began feeling safer knowing it was all finally going to be over. We eventually snuck to my bedroom before the gunman began firing again. The police kept us safe. Again, we were pinned for what felt like hours. At some point, the sun came up. I had no concept of time at this point as I was very much in shock. Trauma makes everything feel like a dream. It's the best way I can describe it to anyone who's never been in this situation before where they're traumatized and there isn't anything you can truly do. It's actually a defense mechanism of the brain, I guess. It can lead to PTSD, among other things. My mind had checked out at this point. It only snapped again when I watched a tree shatter when a bullet went through it. Honestly, part of me didn't want to believe this, and part of me pondered on how many guns the gunman had. The family was scared, and I was definitely scared as well. My mind just wasn't fully processing it at the moment. I held my 1-year-old brother, singing to him and reassuring him he'd be fine, and we wouldn't let anything happen to him. Eventually, my brother drifted off to sleep, and sometime after, I'm not sure how long, the police told us they would be moving us to Town Hall, which was close by our apartment. The cops informed us to stick close to the vehicles and them. They said to keep low and move when they did. After some time, it was finally time to move. The moment we all moved in unison with the police, the gunman opened fire again. I remember the police firing back and the sound of bullets whizzing by from the police and the gunman. I remember being terrified and numb all at once. At one point, we got behind some vehicles, and as bullets ricocheted, we heard one hit the tire and pop it. As we approached Town Hall, I saw news reporters and people looking afraid. I forgot about the blanket the police had put around me before leaving our home, and tripped over it in chaos. I didn't get up immediately and remember people freaking out, thinking I'd been shot. The truth was, I was embarrassed by tripping, and I'd hit my head pretty hard on the fall. A police officer eventually picked me up and began running. We eventually were cornered by the media, who was trying to talk to my mom and I, and was a little overwhelming, but I remember feeling some semblance of safety again. In time, we made it to the paramedics, and I remember someone of some importance reassuring us that we were safe now. It could have been the mayor, he was dressed sharply enough. Once we arrived at our SIP, shelter in place, they had gym mats out, and after our pizza, some attempt at play, and the eventual settling down of things, I crashed. My sleep wasn't uninterrupted as I woke up any time I heard gunfire, but once the gunfire lessened and eventually stopped, I felt an array of feelings and exhaustion overcome me. We were finally, truly safe. I cried myself back to sleep and a nightmare woke me up, and eventually we went home again. There was a heaviness in the air when we returned to our apartment. We hadn't fully processed everything that we had went through yet. The apartment never felt the same after that day. I remember being irrationally pissed when I went back to my room. It was a mess, the door had been kicked off the hinges and never truly shut right after that, even when fixed. My curtains were destroyed and everything was trashed. I found out later that the police had used my room as a staging ground of sorts. Bear, thankfully, made a full recovery from his injuries. Well, the physical ones anyway. I found out years later that he was never the same after being shot. Then again, I'm still not the same today myself. I don't blame Bear one bit for being messed up. Remember the man in the mirror? I described him to Wendy, and she explained I'd given the description of the shooter to the finest details. I don't recall having seen the shooter at all, but perhaps maybe I did. The mind will do strange things to you while in shock. When the break was over and we went back to school, the kids kept asking us questions about what happened. We couldn't deal with it, and I went to the office, called my mom, and left. The school told us to take as long as we needed, and we took months off as a result. When the information eventually came out that it turned out that our neighbor across the way was the shooter, his name was Patrick Wood, he was ex-military and the police had thrown tear gas into his home, but he had not left. Later on, they realized he hadn't left because he had a gas mask on. Inside his home, they found tons of weapons and ammunition. He dug a tunnel out from his house to his shed, where his weapons were, and he'd used that to restock and reload when he was completely out of ammunition. The man also had several medications strewn all over the place. During the time I was with Bear, I heard a whirring sound on the first bullet. It turned out that it was the sound of a bullet narrowly missing my head. I'm lucky to be alive, to share this story with you. Patrick was terminally ill with cancer and his wife left with their kids. I'd imagine that's why he did what he did. I pass no judgment on his wife. It isn't her fault she snapped. I believe she had good reasons for leaving with their kids. It's going to sound crazy, but please hear me out when I say I empathize with Patrick in a way. He'd lost everything, and placing myself in his shoes, while I probably wouldn't have done what he did, I do see things from his perspective. Some part of me feels if the guy wanted me dead, he wouldn't have missed me with the headshots. I don't think he actually wanted me dead, and I can only speculate it might have just been because he thought of his daughter, maybe. It's only speculation and we'll never know, as he was shot and now he's dead. Patrick was amazingly the only person to die during the shooting. I feel bad he died, and since the events of that day, I feel safe nowhere. Any loud popping or sudden sound send me into a panic. Sometimes I feel cold sweat or hyperventilating. I only leave my home when I have to. I'm suspicious of anyone I come across, and I'm always looking over my shoulder at people. My insomnia is a lot worse, and I'm an introvert since that day. All of this is a result of PTSD. I've had several years of therapy, but it's never completely solved the PTSD issue. It has helped me process things to a degree, but I'm still messed up and mentally broken as a result of my experiences. This is something you can't unsee. This is something you can't see on the outside either. It's internal, and I try to put on a brave face around people. I believe you can outwardly show fear to people, as some people will immediately see you as prey. Thank you for letting me share this with you all. And thank you to anyone who listens to it. Please be safe out there.
My name is Shane, and I'm from Calgary, Alberta. I've been around for 40 plus years. First off, I'm not sure if this has something to do with the number of sightings or incidents I have been in with ghosts or such. Some might say I produce this aura, or maybe an energy that attracts these non-living people. At any rate, this story happened back in the early 80s. I was on my way to school. My mother had given me $5 for lunch. I felt rich, as this amount was a small fortune for a youngster. It was a beautiful day out, very warm for the morning. I caught the transit bus and things seemed fine. I decided to stop at the store to buy some treats with my money before continuing on to school. I rang the bell for my stop and got up to walk towards the back doors, departing the bus soon after. I walked about 10 steps and pushed the pedestrian crosswalk button. I looked left and the cars were stopped. I then proceeded across slowly and looked right. The cars were stopped as well. What I remembered next was I walked just past the first car on the right of me, and then things went pitch black. Fast forward, and I awoke in the hospital. I had been in a coma, and according to my sister, my family was called to see me before I was about to die. I remember that I was on some kind of bed, and I could only hear voices. I tried to open my eyes and everything was super white. I couldn't focus very well, but I came through just as the nurse was taking my blood. I tried speaking, but nothing would come out at first. She was telling me to stay calm and not move. But I pushed her away and told her, "Don't do that. I'm going to pass out." She continued anyway, and I did pass out. Skipping forward, I did eventually wake up, and things gradually got better. This brings us to what I was mentioning earlier in the story. My brother and I went to my mother's friend Rose's house to be babysat in the downtown part of Calgary. Rose and her husband Jim lived in an apartment unit in a super old three-story house with their baby girl Angel. It was just before winter, so it was cold. My brother went out with Jim to go and watch the fighting that was called Stampede Wrestling, which was a 10-minute walk from the house. I was left home with Rose and the baby. Angel was fast asleep in her crib and Rose was in the kitchen baking. I was watching TV, looking for cartoons and enjoying myself. Rose would speak to me periodically and make sure things were okay. Angel's room was just across from me, and the door was open about 6 inches. As I sat there watching TV, the door to Angel's room started to open very slowly. All I could see inside was darkness. That's when I heard what I thought was Angel getting some toys out of her toy box. Soon, the shuffling of toys stopped. I then saw this dark figure bend down inside the doorway and push this red truck towards me. It came pretty close, but I had to lean forward to pick it up. I aimed it towards the door and pushed it as hard as I could, as I had wanted it to hit the door. The truck hit the open door and ended up inside Angel's room. Moments later, the truck came flying out and hit my foot. I shouted in pain, but I ultimately picked it up and pushed it back into the doorway. This time, though, nothing happened. As I stared into the darkness inside the doorway, I saw this scary-looking person that I didn't recognize looking at me. This scared me so much I froze in place. My brain couldn't process what I was looking at. I knew it was way too big to be the little girl, but I didn't know who it could be. In the blink of an eye, the person moved back into the room. I could now hear the old plastic horse on springs bouncing up and down. I went over to Rose and told her that her daughter was up. She came with me, opened the door and turned on the light. I was so confused when I saw the little girl fast asleep inside her crib. Rose turned off the lights and told me to come with her. She told me Angel was probably tired and must have gone back to bed. I felt so cold and shaky. I went into the next room with Rose and asked if I could help her. We then made cookies and other treats to pass the time while we waited for everyone to come home. The next day, I awoke, and my brother went to play with some other kids down the street. Jim had asked me to come help him in the lower room where another unit was. We both went down there and into a bedroom. I went to use the washroom. I did my thing and then opened the door slowly. And as I looked out, I saw this big-ass dog standing out in the hallway. I was scared shitless. I stayed inside the washroom and called out to Jim, who responded with, "What do you want?" I asked him to come quickly as there was a big dog here in the hall. He quickly came over to the washroom door and said, "Where? There's no dog. You must be seeing things." I came out of the washroom and looked around very cautiously. I got very cold and felt extremely scared. I then moved quickly to the stairs and took 3 steps. Out of nowhere, Jim, this mountain of a man, scooped me up, took 3 huge steps and slammed the door behind us before locking it. Rose asked him, "What's wrong?" Jim was out of breath and told her, "I saw that thing again." Rose told me to go play. That was the last I ever heard of this.
I've lived in the UK most of my life, and I've been in all sorts of creepy situations, and have met all sorts of creepy people. One of the scariest experiences I've had, though, took place on Halloween of 2009. I was 9, and had a couple of my friends with me who we'll call Matt and Jessica. We were going around the neighborhood getting candy, and all in all, it was good times. It was when we came upon a final couple of houses that things started to get interesting. One of the 2 houses stood out over the other. On this house were what looked like old-fashioned lights, and behind it was a forest, while in the other direction was a long one-way street. We went to the creepy house first and shouted, "Trick-or-treat!" At which point, an old man in his 40s or 50s came out and gave us candy. We were just about to leave when he gestured to us in a disturbing manner. The older man had a wide smile and motioned for me to come back, as though to say he'd give me more candy. It felt like he was singling me out specifically, and not my friends. It gave me a chill, but I shook my head no and went off with my friends. Over time, I heard a giggling which I assumed was Matt and Jessica, but over time it began to get more grating. After a while, I had enough and asked what was so funny. Matt and Jessica gave me a weird look before informing me that they didn't know what I was talking about. I told them that they'd been laughing, but they were insisting that they hadn't been. It was at this point I got very creeped out. If they weren't, who was? Trying to shake off any fear, I decided to ask if we should take the long way, the one-way road, or the short way, the forest home. We were all agreeing that it was getting late, so we decided to go the forest route, thinking we'd save some time. We walked for a short bit looking at our candy and speculating the deliciousness to be had soon when we suddenly heard a loud snap, like a branch being crushed under someone's foot. We saw nothing, and so we assumed it was an animal, till we started walking again and heard it again. We froze in place, and in my mind, I can only imagine showing up on some missing person show. I could already hear the episode in my head, centering around three kids who never returned from trick-or-treating and were never seen again. Trying to shake my overactive imagination, I was about to start walking again when I heard the crunching start moving in our direction. We quickly picked up our pace, and as we did, the now distinct sounds of footsteps picked up their pace. It was at this point we sprinted through the forest and didn't stop till we made it out on the other side and back to our neighborhood. Turning around, I saw him again. It was the man who'd given us candy earlier and asked me to return. He had the same wide smile and was motioning me towards the woods. I, of course, ignored this creepy dude and went straight home. I never told anyone about this, but I still live in the same house and I'm 18 now. I went back to the house next to the old one recently and asked if anyone still lived there. The guy who lives there informed me that there used to be someone living next to him, but he eventually lost it and killed himself. I am a 23-year-old female in an open relationship who has three dogs. Late one night, I noticed the lights were flickering. This escalated with time as I began to notice things like the doors and cabinets being opened when I know I'd shut them. It's important to understand I'm not a superstitious person, and with three dogs, a gun, and a machete, I feel quite safe and comfortable in my own home. This being said, lately, something has felt very off. I can dismiss the flickering lights and even the doors to some degree, but when my dogs start growling, violently barking, and even at times whimpering fear at something that I cannot see in a corner, it puts me on edge. Late one night, I fell asleep with my earbuds in, and upon waking, I couldn't find them. My earbuds are black and my sheets are cream colored, so they should have been noticeable pretty easily. After searching all over my place, I soon came back to find my earbuds laying in the middle of my bed in a manner that suggested someone set them there. On another night, I was gaming when I felt a cold hand on my shoulder. This happened three times that night and sufficiently freaked me out as no one was there and the desk I game around is nowhere near the air conditioning. I also felt a light tapping on my headset, but again, no one was there. My hubby didn't believe me about the place being haunted until he awoke me one night to scratch marks on his back that neither I or his girlfriend left there. The rest of the night he kept trying to get me to admit I had scratched him, but I know I hadn't. We don't have the money to move, and I still worry about things escalating further. The only death I'm aware of was my neighbor's mother. Perhaps she's attached to the land from her motherly bond. I'm not sure. But whatever is happening, I just hope it stops soon. It was a Friday night around 9 p.m., and my family was watching television in the living room while I was in the kitchen grabbing a beer. After I grabbed my beer, I walked back into the living room with my family to watch television. However, before I sat down on the couch, I went to our front window because I heard a weird noise. When I press my face up to the glass to adjust my eyes to the dimly lit street outside, I see a silhouette of a man frantically waving his arms and running with flames engulfing his body. "What the heck?" I yelled and stormed out the front door. I looked down the street and the guy was already about 3 or 4 houses down, running as fast as he could with flames slowly evaporating, but still clinging to his body. That's when I heard burning sounds and looked in my driveway where gasoline was pooling under my car and a fire had started burning the grass hedges next to my house. First thing I could think of was, in the heat of the moment, no pun intended, was to grab the garden hose and start trying to put out the fire. As I'm unraveling the hose and spilling water to go put the fire out, my wife is on the porch and asks me what's going on. I tell her to call the fire department, and now she sees the flames creeping out along the driveway, getting dangerously close to our car and front yard. It took me about 5 to 10 minutes, but I got the fire out just as the fire department arrived with the police. The police asked me what happened and I explained the situation. Soon after, another police car showed up and they had someone detained in the back. I couldn't confirm his identity because I never got a clear look at his face, but he had to be treated for burns, so it had to be the suspect. They ended up taking him away and nothing on my property got damaged except for the plants next to my house. Apparently, now this was just speculation among the neighborhood, the guy was a hitman that made a living as a kickboxer who did hits for people on the side. The principal of our local elementary school was having an affair. He was having it with one of the teachers, and the secretary of the school had told the principal's wife that he was cheating. The principal's wife then hired a hitman to take out the secretary and her cheating husband, apparently. The hitman's plan was to set the secretary's house on fire and then drive by and shoot the cheaters when they evacuated the house. The problem being, I guess he messed up by A, accidentally setting himself on fire in the process, and B, he got the completely wrong house. He was supposed to target my next door neighbor, but got the houses mixed up and hit my house by mistake. After setting himself on fire, he ran down the street and around the corner to where his car was parked. But because he was burning so bad, he had to stop, drop, and roll. My other neighbors, concerned, called the police and reporting a man on fire in the middle of their street. The principal ended up getting fired and the secretary, my neighbor, ended up selling their house and moving. But I don't know what happened to the hitman from a legal standpoint. Thanks for watching this video. If you enjoyed these stories you've probably never heard before, be sure to hit that like button, as it helps me know if you liked them or not. Also, comment down below which story was your favorite one. I thought these were all really intense, possibly the most intense I've covered all year. From shootings to alleged paranormal happenings to just downright creepy neighbors, these stories definitely will freak people out. Much thanks to my friend Fearcrawler who helped me read story number 2. It's a big help to me, so please check out his channel and subscribe. If you have a story you'd like to share that potentially be in a future video, be sure to send it in to swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. I hope you all have a good holiday, no matter what you celebrate, and get everything you wish for. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.